chapter 19. We are continuing our series through Genesis. This is message number 20 in that series, entitled Sin in the City. Genesis chapter 19, start here with verses 1 to 3. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early and go on your ways. And they said, Nay, but we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. So chapter 18 gives us an interesting bridge between the promises of God to Abraham, particularly pertaining to the seed, and to the judgment on the cities of the plain. So Sarah's faith was tested there as she hears that she will, in fact, have a son, and yet she recognizes the impossibility of this at her stage in life. And so the Lord asks, is anything too hard for God? And the implication is that nothing can stand in the way of God fulfilling his promises, no matter the nature of whatever obstacles that they may be, whether it be the threat of men or the threat of demons or whatever natural obstacles that there may seem to be, that nothing will stand in the way of God fulfilling the promises that he has made. And the Lord goes on to reveal to Abraham that he will bring judgment on the cities of the plain. And in fact, he's going to destroy them in judgment. And Abraham cannot reconcile that God would sweep away the righteous together with the wicked in judgment. And so then he asks, will not the judge of all the earth do right in regard to that particular question? And of course, the Lord's response informs him that he will deliver the righteous and he will destroy the wicked in judgment. Now, Moses delivered this book of Genesis to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob there on the plains of Moab when they were set to go in and take possession of the land of Canaan. And there were hostile nations, there were giants in the land, and all of these things seemed to be impossible obstacles for them. But they have a twofold assurance that comes from Genesis chapter 18. First of all, nothing is too hard for God. And secondly, the judge of all the earth will do right. So we see an interesting connection between that promised seed at the beginning of the chapter and then the judgment to come at the end of the chapter. So Israel had been promised the land, and judgment had been promised on the nations of Canaan for all of their iniquities for many, many generations. In fact, God waiting until that time was full. And so the point is, nothing and no one and no nation and no giants and nothing can stop God from fulfilling his promise, which is to give this land to the descendants of Abraham, and he will fulfill his righteous judgments as well, as he has pronounced judgment on these nations, and that is one of the reasons why they are being disinherited, why they are being cut off from that land of Canaan. So chapter 19 now continues this account with the actual destruction of the cities of the plain. And we get a very grievous picture of the sins in Sodom in this account. Clearly, there are many unnatural perversions in that city. And in other places, sins are more elaborated on. So, for instance, the prophet Ezekiel, in Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 49 to 50, says, Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw good. So we typically, when we think about the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, we typically think of that chief sin of homosexuality of which they were guilty of and for which their name even stands for, sodomy or sodomites and all that sort of thing. But there were other sins as well within that city. They were a fully, thoroughly corrupted city, and God was bringing judgment on them because of it. Now, Abraham remains, as you read through chapter 19, Abraham certainly doesn't seem to be sort of a major character in this particular chapter, but he is still a part of the account, and he's looking on from a distance. And so it's clear as you read through this chapter that Lot is blessed because of Abraham, and he's blessed by God's mercy and not his own merit. So this chapter has not left the theme of God's covenant with Abraham. So as we look at this chapter, we're going to do so in two parts, and it is a fairly long chapter, but verses 1 to 29, which give us the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and verses 30 to 38, that lasting legacy of sin there in Lot's family. So we want to begin in the first part, and we'll look at the first 11 verses. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, "Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early and go on your ways." And they said, "Nay, but we will abide in the street all night." And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, "Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them." And Lot went out at the door unto them, and shut the door after him, and said, "I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do you to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing. For therefore came they under the shadow of my roof." And they said, "Stand back." And they said again, "This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them." And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. But the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them, and shut to the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. So this chapter opens with the two angels that had visited Abraham that we read about in chapter number 18. They visited with, again, this pre-incarnate appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. These two angels then parted, and they went on to Sodom. And so they have arrived at the city of Sodom, and their Lot is sitting in the gate of the city, the entrance of the city. And he greets these men, and he provides hospitality much like Abraham. So when you read the beginning of chapter 18, the beginning of chapter 19, you'll notice a number of parallels between Lot and Abraham and receiving these visitors. There are some likenesses, and there are some differences as well as you go through the account. But as you notice about Lot's hospitality, there's a certain urgency to it, that he's pressing upon these men. You have to come in to my house. You cannot stay out in the city, out in the open. And so that urgency reflects the fact that Lot knew where he was living. He knew what that this city was like, and he knew what would happen to these men had they stayed out in the open like they had said they were going to do. So Lot does persuade them to come in, and he feeds them and does all the sort of hospitality, again, just as Abraham had done. But before they go to bed for the night, the men of the city were told, both the young and old, in other words, giving us the idea that this is a very large group, an extensive group, and they surround the house where Lot lived, and they demand that he brings these two men out to them. Now, Lot refuses this, and in so doing, he condemns their wickedness. He says, "Don't do so wickedly." In other words, he right out knows their intentions. He knows the extent of their lusts and how unrestrained and insatiable that they are, and he condemns their ideas and their request. Now, Lot acts out of desperation. And he offers the men his two daughters. He had two unmarried daughters at home, apparently. And he offers to send them in the place of these two men. And Lot's actions here are unthinkable. I really cannot find any good way to explain them. Reading other people that talk, comment on this passage and what have you, there's really not a good explanation for why that Lot would do this, why he would choose this route. But I do believe that it shows how clearly compromised that Lot was, that this was even thinkable to him. And it also makes me wonder if Lot really understood who these angels were that had come to him, because certainly they were in no danger from the men of the city of Sodom. Now, when you read about Lot later, like in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 6 to 9, this is what Peter wrote, "And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that after should live ungodly." And here again, we see, as we talked about in the last message, how that the judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah is repeated throughout the Bible as a reference point, as a pattern of God's judgment. It says, "And delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for the righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished." So even as Peter refers to Lot, he refers to him as a righteous man, but yet one that was vexed, one that was clearly affected by the wickedness of the city that he had chosen to live in and to surround himself and his family with. So again, Lot is certainly very compromised as he is dwelling in the city of Sodom. Now, it shouldn't come as any surprise to us, but the men of Sodom take great exception to Lot's judgment of them. He condemns them, don't do this wickedness. Well, and the truth is, from a way of looking at it, they're not entirely wrong that Lot's at least a little bit hypocritical to be condemning them when he's been living in this city. And I'm not saying that he had partaken in all these things of the city, but he had lived there and had benefited, had prospered in business and in life from this city. And so he is at least a little bit hypocritical in denouncing them. But then not only are they fueled by insatiable lust, but now they're also fueled by anger. And it was only stopped by the angel striking them with blindness after they had pulled Lot in the house so that they couldn't get at him. And just, again, just a scene that is just unimaginable of the things that have happened here. Let's look at verses 12 to 14. "And the men said unto Lot, Hast thou here any besides, son-in-law, and thy sons, and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord. And the Lord has sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law." So the angels, they confirm, obviously they have confirmed the condition of the inhabitants of Sodom, as you recall from the previous chapter, that essentially they were sent so as to check it out and confirm their wickedness. They again, forming two witnesses to the Lord's investigation. And so they have confirmed the condition of the inhabitants of Sodom. And they are now warning Lot to flee out of this city unless he also be swept away in the judgment that is to come. And then Lot, in turn, warns his family, warns his sons-in-law, and they immediately think that he must be joking. And they're just unmoved by these warnings. So in other words, they have no reason to take him seriously. And the word for one that mocks is the same word used for laugh, and Abraham laughed, and Sarah laughed, and now we see a little bit different side. So in the laughter of Abraham and Sarah, we saw a disbelief. We saw them trying to grapple with something that they could not perceive how that it could be possible. This is something impossible. How is the Lord going to do this? So it, again, it's a laughter of disbelief. Here with the sons of Law, we see that they think that Lot is mocking, that he's joking, that he's making fun. So this is rooted in unbelief and rejection of the Word of God. And so they're simply unmoved by these warnings that they have received. Let's look at verses 15 to 22 now. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, "Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city." And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. And it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, "Escape for thy life, look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain, escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed." And Lot said unto them, "Oh, not so, my lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life, and I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live." And he said unto him, "See, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou become thither." Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. So after the sunrise, now the angels have warned Lot to flee immediately. But he was hesitant to leave, we're told. He doesn't want to start out. In the end, he doesn't really want to leave the city all that much. And they had to actually take him. They had to get hold of him and his wife and the two daughters that were in the house with him. The angels had to get hold of them and actually take them outside of the city. And Moses here notes that they took Lot, they took his wife, they took his two unmarried daughters out of the city, and did so because God was merciful. And we've talked about at different times how when you're reading these historical accounts, sometimes we're just simply given facts of the account. Sometimes we're given these sort of theological comments and commentary, and that's what we have here in the mentions of mercy. Because God was merciful, Lot and his family was taken out of the city. And then, of course, the angels charge them that they are to leave and not to even look back. They are to flee to the mountains, but Lot begged to stay in the city of Zoar, as it came to be known. The name Zoar means something like little city or something along that line. And then we come to verses 23 to 28. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities, and all the plain, and all the inhabitants of the cities, and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. So after that Lot was clear, and he is in this little city of Zoar, the Lord, we're told, rained fire and brimstone on the cities of the plain, destroying them and destroying everything in them. Now remember that the Lord had promised way back with Noah that he would not again destroy the whole earth with a flood. And so this is a judgment that comes upon these cities of the plain, Zoar only being accepted from that judgment, and they are totally destroyed. And we also read that Lot's wife defied the angels, and that she looked back and she suffered judgment. And it is interesting the wording that is used, and it could mean as much as a glance back. It could mean that she turns around and that she's longing to go back. And it could mean that she even possibly started back toward the city. That's not entirely clear just from the wording that is used, but nevertheless, it is certainly clear that she didn't want to leave, that she defied what the angels had told them to do. And of course, she suffers judgment being turned into, as it's called here, a pillar of salt. And then we read about Abraham. And again, Abraham is not really featured in this chapter, except in just a couple of references. And here he goes back to where he talked with the Lord when he was overlooking this plain, and he looks and he sees the smoke of the judgment coming up from where these cities have been destroyed. And then we get verse 29. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. So we're told that God remembered Abraham. And the fact that God remembered has occurred before in Genesis. In fact, it's occurred a few times, and all of those in reference to Noah, in reference to God's covenant with Noah. And as you go on reading in the Bible, we will find other places where it is spoken of that God remembered. God remembered oftentimes Abraham, or he remembered Isaac, or remembered Jacob, or he remembered his promises. And we've already seen a number of times as we've been studying through the Psalms, particularly in those Psalms of Lament, when there is prayer from the psalmist asking God to remember. Now again, this doesn't mean that God has forgotten or that God was in any danger of forgetting, but we do find that God remembering is a what we would call a covenantal reference. God has made a promise, and what it's by saying that God remembers, it is underlining the fact that God is acting according to his promise. He's acting according to what he has previously said that he would do. So here we're told that he remembered Abraham. Now that means not just the intercession of Abraham, because Abraham did intercede back in chapter number 18 when he's you know, will you destroy it for 50 righteous, for 45, for 40, for 30, and so on. He is interceding that the Lord, you know, the judge of all the earth must do right. You will not sweep away the righteous with the wicked in judgment. So when it says that God remembered Abraham, it's not only this intercession, it's not only that Abraham you know, said this or prayed this, but that he's remembering his own promises to Abraham. So as you read through this account, Lot is a very compromised figure. Lot is one that certainly is not giving any merit of his own, but he is clearly shown that it is by God's mercy that Lot has been delivered from this judgment of destruction. And it's also that Lot is clearly being blessed through Abraham. Now, Lot is family of Abraham. He's not a descendant of Abraham, but he is connected with Abraham. And clearly through his connection with Abraham, in this sense, Lot is being blessed through Abraham. And so we are continuing to see how that God is fulfilling these promises that he is going to bless all the nations of the earth through Abraham. Those that bless Abraham will be blessed, and those that curse Abraham will be cursed. And so we already see, again, signs of these fulfillment. And so God remembered Abraham, meaning he remembered his promises, he remembered his covenant with Abraham, and he acted in mercy toward Lot. Not that Lot deserved to be delivered from this judgment, but he acted in mercy toward Lot and delivered him from this judgment in remembrance of Abraham, meaning, again, his covenant promises to Abraham. Then we come to the last part of the chapter, verses 30 to 38. And here we see this lasting, lingering legacy of sin in Lot's life as a result, no doubt, of his time in the city of Sodom. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, For he feared to dwell in Zoar, for he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. And the firstborn said unto the younger, Our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, Behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also, and go thou in and lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. And the firstborn bare a son, and called his name Moab, the same as the father of the Moabites unto this day. And the younger, she also bare a son, and called his name Ben-Ammi, the same as the father of the children of Ammon unto this day. So we're told that Lot did not stay in the city of Zoar. He did go there instead of going to the mountains because of this judgment. He escaped that judgment. And we're not told why that Lot did not stay in the city of Zoar. So maybe he feared judgment coming on them, as they also were a city of the plain and seemed to just receive an exemption there. Maybe the residents there were angry with him because of the destruction of the other cities. We really don't know. But for whatever reason, he leaves the city of Zoar, and he does go on to the mountains where the angels had first told him to go, and he ends up dwelling in a cave there in the mountains above the plain. Now, previously, he had chosen this well-watered plain, this luscious plain, because of his great substance and because of the promise of prosperity that it brought for him. And now he's living in a cave with only his two daughters left of all that he had. And then we read of these daughters coming up with this scheme. And again, it's one of those places where I just don't have a good explanation for why they would come up with such a scheme. Obviously, as we read it, it wasn't something that was fueled by lust in the sense of what had taken place in the city of Sodom previously, but it seemingly was, again, something that was born out of desperation. And in this sense, we get in the ending of this chapter, we get some remarkable reversals. We get some mirroring that goes on, which would be certainly a very much a wisdom element to this chapter. So Lot, out of desperation, sort of offers these daughters off to the men of Sodom. And then in a reversal at the end, ultimately, Lot commits the corruptions here with his daughters, though he was senseless because he was made drunk during these nights, saying he had no knowledge of what happened, which that's certainly is very drunk. But this plan was born out of desperation. And Lot had condemned those corruptions in the city of Sodom, and only to have these things played out in now his own home, his own cave in the mountains. But ultimately what came of this was two different nations, the nations of Moab and the nations of Ammon. And these nations were actually given inheritance in the land because of their connection to Abraham. So when you look at in Deuteronomy, toward the end of the Pentateuch, this is what Moses said, Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 9. And the Lord said unto me, Distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. And in verse 19 of that chapter, And when thou comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give thee of the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. And so we come to understand that again, because of this connection with Abraham, these two nations come of Lot. They're not nations descended from Abraham, but certainly connected to him. And these nations are actually given inheritances in the land that Israel is not to go in and possess, is not to take from them. We've talked before about the nations and the inheritances that have been given to the nations, and we don't know all the details of all that. We don't know all the extents of all that, and how those nations, for instance, how would all those nations be divided up today? We really don't know how all that would be. But here again, we have other nations and reference to their inheritance, which is outside of the inheritance promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the nation of Israel after them. And so here in Deuteronomy, Moses is telling them they have their inheritance, and that's the word for possession there means inheritance. They have their inheritance from God, and you're not to go in and make war with them. You're not to go in and seek to possess them, to disinherit them from their inheritance. So as we look at chapter 19, and we know that Israel was to understand the background of Moab and Ammon in their day, and why they were not to invade them. So Lot also stood as a strong warning against assimilation with the pagan nations in Canaan. Part of the reason for the separation that Israel was to maintain from those nations in Canaan was to limit or to restrain the influence that those nations would have over Israel for evil, particularly the persuading of them and leading them in ways of idolatry. Israel had another miraculous witness. Here in the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, they had another miraculous witness of judgment. Obviously, this generation that Abraham gave these books to, this generation had seen being delivered through the wilderness. Their parents had been delivered in the judgments on Egypt and at the Red Sea and all of those sort of things. And here's another miraculous witness of judgment, along with this promised word of God that had determined judgment on the Canaanites. So in other words, again, this book is written to and is given to this generation of Israel that is about to go into this promised land, and they're about to engage in warfare with these various nations. And when they looked at the land and they saw the hostile nations and they saw the giants and they saw all of these problems, all of these obstacles, when they come back and they look at God's promise of judgment and that he had determined judgment on those nations, we see that they were looking at them wrong. They saw strong warrior nations, they saw giants, and they should have looked at them as evil giants and wicked nations in the land of Canaan that God had promised to judge. And not only had God promised to judge, God had promised to judge those nations through the nation of Israel. Their invasion and conquest of the land was an instrument, was a tool of God's judgment against those nations. In other words, they had every reason to believe that if they believed and they trusted and they obeyed the word of God, that he would deliver all of these nations into their hands. Of course, we know that they failed to do that. But they should not have been afraid to go in and possess their own inheritance by promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, as we read Genesis chapter 19, we certainly take many of these same types of lessons away as well. We cannot underestimate the influence for evil that can be exerted on us by the culture in which we live. Now, Paul was very clear writing to the Corinthians that you're in the world, and if to avoid that, you'd have to just go out of the world. You can't avoid that. You can't get away from that. But also being aware of that influence for evil that can be exerted on us. When we look at Lot, at just how weak and compromised that Lot was in the city of Sodom. Well, there's a lesson there for us just as well as there was for the generation of Israel. Lot had obviously chosen many things in life as a priority over the righteousness of God and over faith, and he certainly suffered as a result of it. So Lot is a warning for us all, and we might look at the account and think, well, you know, Lot, he was still called righteous Lot, and God saved him from the judgment. But again, he was severely compromised. He suffered in many ways as a result. He obviously lost some of his family members in this judgment, having no influence and no voice over them as well. And of course, it's also sad to realize that we also have the full history of Israel to read after. And what did they do? Did they heed the warning of Lot? No, they didn't. They followed in his steps, and those nations around them were continual temptations and thorns and snares for them in leading them away from the Lord.